Welcome to Bridge the Gap with host Josh and Lucas, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by our supporting partners, NHI, TSO Life, NRC Health, Erdman, Sherpa, TIS, and R-Care. Find out more about this podcast at btgvoice.com.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast, the senior living podcast with Josh and Lucas. We're in the thick of it here at NIC 2019, the fall conference here in Chicago. We have the one and only Joel Nelson, CEO of LCS. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Awesome. Thanks for coming out. It's such a busy show. I know you've got a busy schedule, so thanks for carving out some time for us.
Joel, before we dive into your background, I just want to first mention what you guys are doing as far as a cultural perspective, which clearly is the forefront of disrupting and changing the next generation of what seniors housing is, or senior living, or aging, or whatever you want to call it now, is a big piece of that. You, as a big operator in the space, you clearly are putting resources into recruiting and retaining and trying to attract people to this business tied to a mission. I saw some videos and some other content. You guys are doing a podcast. What's your thought process behind all of those things?
Well, I think it all starts with the people, right? And our company has always been a company that's based on the fundamentals. Our top three assets we always talk about: culture, number one; talent, number two; vision, number three. And so if you're really going to walk the walk between culture and talent, then that's an everyday process, 24/7, 7 days a week. And so we've taken a lot of additional efforts of recent, because we know talent is an expensive resource out there, or maybe a resource that's not as plentiful as we all need with growing companies. And it's been a company that has shifted a little bit in balancing. Certainly culture has always remained the number one uno. And that's just who we are as a company. But our company is changing and evolving. And then as a result of not having that internal talent, thinking back when I joined the company 33 years ago, I was a 21-year-old college kid, worked for a health system for about less than 12 months, and joined this organization. And at that time, in 1986, we had 21 communities. And I can remember sitting at the events like this, Leading Age at the time, because we were predominantly a non-for-profit manager. Sure. At that time. And, you know, I was sitting at the table with the CEO and the CEO's wife and the full leadership. And so as we look at the talent going in, we still are very, very heavy on professional development. And we can talk about Vision 2025 and some of the things you're hearing on our podcast, et cetera. But we really do believe in investing in the future. And I'm only one of many that's had the opportunity to spend most all of their, you know, adult career in such a rewarding field. Yeah. And so, but then on top of that, we've really been able to bring in, there's so many great people that work in this space, and everybody may not be the right for the LCS culture, but being able to bring in people not only from within the industry, but external to the industry, that has very strong cultural and mission alliances to what LCS is all about.
I love that. So just hearing you talk and just learning about, you know, the 21-year-old that you were, you had some healthcare background, but there's a lot of 21-year-olds out there. Probably the majority of 21-year-olds don't have that background. Many of them, I would argue the majority of them, don't even know what senior living is.
Yep.
It seems like that is just a really untapped group with endless potential to help us meet the labor challenges. Do you guys believe that? If so, do you have some specific initiatives around that? Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely, I believe. But we're not, everybody knows what it is to be in hospitality management and managing hotels as we sit here, or going to school and becoming a CPA or an engineer. And when you say senior living, what's that mean, right?
Right.
And I think an effort that our foundation has really taken the lead, and my compliments to my predecessor, who isn't finished yet, Ed Kenny. I don't think he'll ever be finished, but Ed is so passionate about the opportunities that are out there for the future. And so Vision 2025 that we're doing in collaboration with all of the associations and with the providers in the universities. And then each of the associations has their own strategies I'm on the Workforce Development Committee with Argentum and chair that committee, and as a board member. And you know, it's in our communication and our strategy through Argentum, it's about getting ambassadors like the three of us who know this space, know what it can mean, and know the career opportunities, not only from a personal reward and an alignment as part of the mission, but this can be a lucrative career. I mean, there are highly compensated individuals that are, you know, you think about it. I was running a CCRC at 22. Today, there are folks out there running them at 25, 26, 27. And those individuals, they bring energy, they bring passion, they bring love, they bring care to the seniors. And at the same time, making very competitive, you know, salaries and compensation plans. So we are working at just almost from all angles. What I would encourage, and we do in our company, one of our targets at Argentum is to have 500 plus ambassadors. That really needs to be 1,000 ambassadors out there, and then growing from there. And, you know, I go to a capstone class at a university. We're involved with several of the colleges and universities. And it doesn't have to be. In fact, it'd be better if it wasn't the CEO who was the old guy. But taking the talent that we have in our organization that is closer, that can connect with those college grads, and even going lower than the college grads and starting right. at high school and saying, look at this community. Wouldn't it be great if you were running it someday?
Sure.
Or look at this company that's this big real estate company dealing with REITs and private equity as financial-minded individuals. And it cuts across so many areas. Technology, we could probably spend this whole session talking about the fun stuff that's going to be out there if you're really interested in advancing technology and serving seniors. So we're all over the board in trying to penetrate, and we as an industry, we've just got to be a collective unified effort out there saying, take a look. And at this conference, as an example, I know there are several students here attending this conference.
Yeah.
Think about, you know, why isn't there 100?
Right.
Or why don't we have 250 students here? Right. Now that's going to take some personal but each of us as providers and capital sources, maybe we're going to have to sponsor one or two of those kids to get them here, yeah. pay their flight, pay their lodging. But what a great exposure.
Well, mm-hmm. I love that you almost answered my next question right there with the whole sponsoring, because one of the things, our audience is growing. It's very broad. There's even a growing sector of our audience that know nothing about senior housing, which is very encouraging to us that we're now penetrating that a little bit. But this vision 2025, as yep. you mentioned, there's obviously, I know, a lot of complexity around that, a lot of strategy. But to our listeners that are out there in the senior industry, they're all stakeholders. What are some of the low-hanging fruit things that would be consistent with the strategy and initiatives that we could put out there as a challenge to say, do these 1, 2, 3 things in your local communities, in your regional platforms?
Well, I think it starts with education and information, right? And we all have our avenues to the high school systems and schools within respective markets. We talk a lot about multi-generational leadership and interaction in our communities. So taking those resources and connecting them with, we have a, you know, bring your child to work day. And so we had probably 50 kids. They all had to be 12 and under. And so I started talking to them about, you know, who would like to be a chef? And then I show a little video of, you know, our chef contest, a national chef of the year that LCS has. And then, you know, we had a little session about, you know, tell me what your mom or dad does at LCS. And you can imagine that.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
but just fun stuff and to begin getting them to thinking about, boy, this is pretty cool to think about what mom or dad does, et cetera. And so the it's education and informing. And then in addition to that, I think Vision 2025 is a pretty simple goal. And I think we can blow it out of the water if we all get behind it. But we want to have 25 providers, and we want to have 25 universities by 2025, 25 to 30. And we're producing 1,000 graduates a year. Hmm. in senior living / hospitality management, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're really into the development side, maybe it's architect with a minor in senior living management. But getting that exposure, and that's really what we're talking about, is we have to change the image of our industry.
Yeah.
This is a fun and exciting, it's not the old folks' home. This is an exciting career track for individuals to think about as they're beginning to have those thoughts about college. And the other thing is communicating to, you know, as a parent and a son going off to college here next year and having graduated my daughter, as you think about colleges, they can sit down and have these conversations as they are doing tours and saying there are guaranteed jobs, mm-hmm. and there are paid internships.
Sure.
And that's, you ask me what we can do as an industry, the days of having the, you know, 2 week, you know, tour or shadowing, let's go beyond that and see if we can't have more paid internships either through a semester or you know, an off semester, which some of the universities and colleges are already doing, or through the summer. And we find some of our greatest talent through the kids that have had exposure through high school working in the communities, maybe on the maintenance crew, maybe in the dining room, maybe as a caregiver. And then they're advancing because we're pulling them in for a summer internship at the communities while they're still in school. And then when they graduate, no strings attached. But this year, we hired 9 new, what we call in our PDP, their associate directors, into our professional development program. 7 of those 9 individuals came through our summer internship.
Oh, that's cool. So macro level, you know, how do we change and get the attention of these university systems to where it's like, hey, senior living's a thing?
Yep.
Because, you know, as you said, hospitality and all these other sectors, there's specific programs all around the country for those. So like, how what is the strategy behind that? How are we going to get these 25 institutions or more?
Yeah, I think part of it is working. And there's a number, to my surprise, as the team started putting together Vision 2025, there are a number of programs out there in healthcare administration.
Wow. Okay.
And I think it's beginning to get a little bit of a bend to the senior living side of healthcare administration. And we're seeing that. We're even seeing master's programs being developed in senior living. Hmm. And so that's new. But the way we get out there and be getting the colleges, and more importantly, the students, is you got to be out there telling the story.
Sure.
There's all kinds of business grads. And while it helps to have a healthcare or a business administration, we're going to run a community, but not necessarily. You know, we have 6 companies, and you don't have to be a business or a healthcare administration to be running one of those companies, development, real estate, and so forth. So I think it's, we all have to, the dividends are going to be not immediate.
Sure.
But we have to take our turns and being out in our local markets. And this is something that can be done and fits so well with our industry because we are so geographically diverse. LCS is not the right company to be on the West Coast. But there are some companies out there. You think about Seattle, Merrill Gardens, Leisure 180.
Aegis.
Aegis. I mean, the list goes on. With really high quality. And then it doesn't have to be one of the bigger organizations. There are some fantastic smaller regional players. They have to be in those, mm-hmm. teaching a capstone class. Just one night or one sure. evening, one afternoon of the class that they have as part of their capstone class in business.
Well, I love that. And we've talked about that, Lucas, a lot, that our industry, we do an awesome job at producing love stories.
Yeah.
We just have historically done a really bad job at telling the love stories. And so that's something, I think that's great encouragement for our listeners. I love that. And it sounds like we need to do a better job at talking about these programs that are already out there, mm-hmm. right? Because that's something I don't hear of that much. And so I think that can be a focus of future podcast topics.
Absolutely. So I want to transition point here. LCS is a fascinating operator. It's very different than some of the other ones because you guys are involved in not-for-profit and also for-profit. You develop your own. You mentioned 6 different companies. Can you talk to us a little bit behind the scenes on the makeup of all that? And there's a lot going on. How is that all managed?
Yeah. Well, great question. And I think if you you know, take us way back, and I'll do a fast track through this. You know, 45 plus years ago, LCS was founded. And a lot of people think, you know, today we're the second largest operator and top 15 owner. And it's not all about size. I want to stress that, and I'll talk about how we manage the businesses. Sure. On a more regional and intimate basis. But LCS was really started as a development company. Hmm. And we were founded by a fourth generation general contractor, the White's Companies. The White's Company is still in senior living construction. And Fred White's was built his first CCRC in 1961 in Des Moines, Iowa.
Wow.
So that's how we were birthed, if you will. But Fred recognized that there was a void, a gap in well-intended organizations. They didn't have the development expertise, and then to get the communities full. Well, then soon later, thereafter, well, we need somebody to operate these communities as well. And so that's really how we became who we are. All six companies are senior-centric. We don't do anything that doesn't touch the lives of seniors. And that's core to who we are and our mission. And the way we do it is we really operate all of them as six separate companies. Think of a holdings company with six separate companies. But one of our primary principles is interconnectivity and interdependent. So you can't run a development company without being interconnected with the operator or interconnected with the purchasing company that we have or the insurance companies that we have. And from an operations execution perspective, you know, we have a dozen plus minus offices regionally across. Ideally, it isn't 100%, so I could be, you know, don't want to misrepresent the fact here. But ideally, if you take our regional office in Charlotte, North Carolina, and you say, draw a 3-hour compass or a direct flight from Charlotte, that's how we're going to serve that. So we have a Southeast company.
Okay.
We do the same in San Diego, California. We do the same in St. Louis, Missouri. We do the same in Indianapolis and repeat that. And so our cluster is really to try to build regional-based service platforms that take advantage of a national network of resources.
I love that. And we've heard tons of people say that the real key is to not lose that local serviceability, that regional serviceability. So obviously that's one of your secret sauces of how you've taken this massive company but not lose sight of the service of the specific region that you're in. That's awesome.
Yeah. And we took a little step forward. We call it the next gen ops model because it's even more important today than I think it ever has been. We've reduced those business unit offices and regional offices so individuals only have 5 to 6 communities. And so if you're a regional ops manager, you're not going in for the board meeting or going in to meet with the owner or going in for an afternoon finance committee meeting. You're going to go in and spend a couple days.
Yeah.
And you know the community, you know the staff, you know the residents. And it allows us to drive to a greater degree of execution success on our primary signature programs. And so it's a model we're having some awesome early success with. It takes more resources, but it's all about personal touch.
Absolutely. Well, and I can personally witness, I came up through the regional ranks and what a tough job those regional roles are, regardless of what you're in. And I can't tell you, well, I can tell you because you know, but the burnout rate of most regionals, and they have families, they have life quality issues. So seeking for that. So not only I'm sure it's helping your bottom line, but from just a labor standpoint, yeah. I have to imagine that's a very positive recruiting tool of like, hey, you're not covering 11 states, you know, you're actually going to be home a few nights and enjoy your family. So that life quality harmony thing that we talk about often on the shows is a real deal.
And you think about that story back to the careers. I mean, this is something that you can do and still have a family life, right?
Right.
And we've got evidence of that today, and hopefully we'll see a lot more of it. But we need, if you're going to reduce the size of those portfolios, guess what? That creates more jobs and more career opportunities for upward growth as you grow through the organization.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, what an exciting conversation. Thank you for spending time with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are really just getting started here at the NIC conference. It feels like I've been here for a couple of days already. It's just getting started. I'm sure you have too. You've been to many of these events before. What are your goals and takeaways out of this event going into Q4 in 2020?
Well, I think I always personally come to Nick to learn. And, you know, we think we hear and we know everything and what people are doing and some of the trends. But the data that Nick puts out and paying close attention to that data as we look at labor, we look at the economy, just was in a meeting this morning that went through the next publication of the Blue Book, if you will, that you guys have seen. And so I think it's taking some of that information. Obviously, we're here to network and be with our partners and clients and meet new people. But it's really also looking for opportunities how we can improve this space. And we all play a part in that. So and Nick, I think, gives us the data and some of the real fact that you can take back and build on how is that going to impact my execution pieces, or how do I put that into my execution strategy? As an example, do you slow down development? Do you accelerate development, or you continue doing what you're doing? And that's a big topic today because there's a lot of factors that Nick is tracking closely to hopefully give us some guidance. So,
has your regional model helped you be quick to adapt and change and innovate? Because we know we've heard from a lot of the big operators that, wow, it's like things are changing so quickly. It seems like as soon as we implement and start getting something, the next trend is already ahead. So is that something you feel like you guys have had sort of a competitive advantage and an edge with this new kind of system you've put out?
Oh, boy. loaded question. I assume this is the last one.
We buttered you up.
Listen, we can never do it quick enough. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that there's just so many priorities out there that it is moving quick. And we have PDPM, PDGM. We got all of those different programs. That's just a piece of it on the reimbursement. Yes. So we try to be... quick and transparent on that, but you this industry's moving.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of us are moving fast enough with it, but we're sure trying.
Yeah. Well, you guys are doing an awesome job. Thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for your leadership in the industry and taking time to help influence the thought leadership surrounding our show.
Yeah. An entire career dedicated to this space. It's really remarkable. Thank you so much. And also thank you. We've become friends with many of your team members, Jelena and Allison, Chris Bird, help us set up this meeting with you. You got a great team, great people. Really appreciate it. And are really rooting for you guys.
Yeah. Thank you much. Appreciate being here.
Awesome to have you.
Thanks for listening to another great episode of Bridge the Gap.
The podcast team wants to hear from you. If you're on Instagram, let us know your takeaways. Take a screenshot of the show you just listened to, tag BTG Voice, and we might just share your thoughts. Thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap.